Andy, episode 5 is over, but we're just getting started. I'm Ghost at the Trial, Sarah Carradine, and I'm here with Contempt of Court, Grace Leader. Grace, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me back, Sarah.
Oh, of course. So we've been covering Candy episode by episode each day this week, and today we're going to cover the final episode. It's called The Fight, and boy, is it.
Yeah.
It was written by David Matthews and Brett Johnson, who wrote episodes 2 and 3, and also show creator Robin Veith, and directed by Michael Uppendahl, who directed episode 1. So it's a bit of a family affair on the creative side there. Grace, we last talked through episode 2. Mm-hmm. So what's your response to episodes 3 and 4 before we dive into 5?
Yeah, I thought both were pretty strong, pretty good. It's a surprise appearance. I did not know that Justin Timberlake would be showing up. So that was fun. I thought he's quite good in the show. Yeah, I thought pretty strong pair of episodes leading into this finale. We've now done 2 shows, Sarah, although I've not been with you each episode, but in which we end on a courtroom proceeding, as we did Landscapers, that miniseries with Olivia Colman earlier this year that did sort of follows the same thing of everything leading up and then the last episode sort of being revolving around the trial. So yeah, I thought, you know, there's a lot of content in those 2 episodes that I think are really strong. It's, I think in particular, the acting in the show has been particularly, is the strong suit of the show, Jessica Biel, Melanie Lynskey, in particular. So yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Yes. For me, that scene of Pat Montgomery, putting the axe into the woodblock 41 times was a fantastic moment, both in the sort of structure of the work, and also Timothy Simons here doing a very good job with Pat. It's not a big role, but he imbues it with all the sort of confused and hurt weariness of a kicked puppy. And I think he does a very, very good job. So let's dive in to, as you say, the court. We finally get to the court. Just for me, this is not my favourite episode, but it's the episode we had to have. It's the episode that everything's been leading towards. First of all, I'll ask you, Betty appearing at the trial, thoughts?
I think Betty vocalizes and is the epitome of what I was thinking while I was watching this episode. So I like her there. And I feel like, interestingly, I feel like my complaint of this last episode and how the season ended up being structured, bar from one scene in this episode, I kind of feel like it's like, oh, like that's it, which is exactly what Betty says in the courtroom later. And so I feel like in some ways that's the feeling I have at the end of the episode. And I'm feeling like it's about the episode of TV that I just watched. But I feel like if we ask the writers and creators of the show, this is exactly how they wanted someone to feel at the end of this episode. So I'm struggling am I actually feeling a little bit like that wasn't enough for me in terms of this episode of TV, or whether is it actually the content of and what happened and why they chose to tell the story that I'm feeling that way. But Betty, I like, and again, there's this thing of like, are you hiring Melanie Lynskey to only be in 4 out of the 5 episodes? No. So you're going to use her in this way. And I think it actually works in a way. When we talked about in Landscapers, what story did the showrunners believe, especially in these true crime stuff where nobody will ever know exactly what happened. Obviously, that's the point of this court case, is to take all the evidence and try to figure out to your best knowledge what happened and decide whether that person is guilty or not. And so I'm always thinking about that. What story do the showrunners actually believe? And there's the moment, I think, the best moment of the episode, the best scene of the episode, and at the end of it Betty says, well, that's your story. And so I think they use her quite well to be able to say, we don't actually really know. what happened. So I like it. What did you think?
Yes, I liked it very much. There's a moment where Candy says something. There's a murmured response from the watching townsfolk, and Betty just looks from side to side at them like, "Are you buying this?" And so I like that. It's wonderful dramatically, I think, and also just in terms of, as we now know, according to the law, Candy's not guilty. So
yes.
I wondered about right from the start about like why the murder wasn't shown, why there's a strong implication that Betty did it, why when Betty, inverted commas, confesses to her lawyer, why we don't hear it, we just see it from the outside, and whether these restraints are put on the creators. And if so, they have used those restraints beautifully, as, you know, wonderful art does use restraints to sort of flower. So because they need to perhaps tread carefully, despite all their caveats about, oh, this is a true story, but we've strayed from it and it's a work of fiction. I would say that legally they have to be very careful, as according to the law, Candy Montgomery is not guilty. So they can use Betty and that wonderful face of Melanie Lynskey. It's the only thing she says in the episode, as you say. She says, you know, well, that's your story. Other than the flashback where she plays Candy's version of Betty so beautifully. Mm-hmm. So I think in those ways the creators have used the character of Betty and the actor to allow their sort of slight editorializing to creep in.
I'm close to putting Melanie Lynskey on the sad woman face Hall of Fame at the moment, or the Mount Rushmore would maybe be a better analogy, up there with Elizabeth Moss, who we're covering over on China Girls. Elizabeth Moss has, I think, one of the best sad woman faces, plays a lot of characters when she's a sad woman. I feel like Melanie Lynskey, she could get up there. She's pretty close at the moment. I don't know who else we want to add onto the Mount Rushmore, but the two of them, I think.
Let's put from a film that I am probably alone in disliking, Love Actually.
I think the Love Actually hate is actually, I think that's becoming much more of a mainstream opinion. So.
Well, I held it alone for so long. I'm surprised that I'm being welcomed into a fold, or perhaps I started the fold and people are coming over. Yes, I never liked it, but I did. I love the Alan Rickman storyline.
Oh,
and you
yeah.
can see I'm just covering up the fact that I cannot remember that wonderful woman's name. So there we go.
We all know her name.
We know her. Emma Thompson. Do you know why? Because I always think of her as Nurse Lemon in The Tall Guy. Yes, the sad face as she greets him at the very end, home from wherever he's been at the airport, and she says, "All right, home." And the sad woman face on that woman has to go up there on the Mount Rushmore. So that's three of them. We might think of a fourth as we go along.
All right.
Thank you for saving me. So we finally get Candy on the stand after some chat with Alan Gore, who is apparently completely supportive of her, it seems. No, they're friends. No, the breakup was mutual, and they have affection for each other. And even the prosecutor mutters, is he a witness for the prosecution or for the defence? He now has Elaine's now moved in, and as we find out at the end, they were married very shortly after the court case. Well, we did see that he couldn't do a dishwasher, so he needed somebody. Mm-hmm. That's always the thought, isn't it? The man needs the woman.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of new information that happens in this episode. I do feel a little bit like we talked about the length of the series, it being five episodes, and that feeling like, oh, that's like, you know, what a, you know, there's no need to expand out a show when you don't need to. If you have this story in mind and you could do it in five episodes, why not do it in five episodes? I did feel a little bit like in this last episode, new information comes to light that I'm like, wait, what? So there's two things, which is this sort of changing of his public sort of stance here. Alan decides, you know, on the stand saying we're still friends, it was amicable. Like, where that comes from, I feel like it's something that I feel like we don't get a lot of information about why Alan decides to do that. And then the other piece of information being the other man that Candy sleeps with after Alan. So I feel like in some sense, I do think that the five episode runtime, there's beats missing in here that I think don't help in this episode, because they're brought up as sort of, they happen and we don't really know why they happen.
Yes. I mean, it should be, you know, according to sort of narrative laws, there shouldn't be new characters or pretty much no new information in this last episode, other than the outcome of the court hearing. So the creators seem to indicate who they think the other man was. She doesn't say on the stand who it was. They have decided that it's Sherry's husband, or they, again, indicate that it was Sherry's husband, her business partner in the business, Cover Girls, mm-hmm. which they laughed like drans when they came up with that that title, as we find out. Yes, but for me, I didn't mind finding that out newly, but where was the connective tissue to Alan's change of stance? He told the police in the first interview that he had broken it off because she had feelings for him, and now he says it was mutual and that they are friends. And this is this and the extra man after Alan are very much in the defense's favor, that she was not heartbroken and jealous because she couldn't have Alan anymore, if the breakup was mutual and if she has since gone on to have another brief love affair. The other thing that we find out, it's touched on very, very lightly. The episode does start with the police recreating what they think the crime was with the prosecutors, and they say the sewing table was across the French doors. And yet when Candy tells the story, she talks about going through the French doors to the outside to meet the puppy. So that's one, again, little small breadcrumb that we're given. Yes, I'm with you. I don't know whether I'm unsatisfied with the episode because the episode doesn't work, or I'm feeling exactly how the creators wanted me to feel. It's been such a confident and I would almost say brilliant series so far, that I lean towards that this is how they want me to feel. Like, all that and then this, then nothing. She gets called murderer and tramp as she leaves the court. But other than that, she seems unscathed, which is curious, and perhaps is the root of our feeling about our slight feeling of what. Mm-hmm. So it might reward a rewatch. So the centerpiece of the episode is her testimony, and we see her version of the meeting with Candy, and this is the extended set piece in the middle of the episode. I'm not particularly squeamish. I don't know if I needed it. I don't quite know how to feel. How did you feel about it?
I feel like this, I mean, to me, this is the clearest indication of them saying she did it, even in her story of it, of making us watch it and thinking how, even if you are, you know, she talks about, and her lawyer is explaining to her, her friend about, you know, that there's a psychological thing that can happen. It's like what happens in war. You just, like, they end up like overshooting the enemy, people playing football. They don't mean to injure someone, but they are so in the zone that they end up doing it. And the thing that triggers her is this flashback she has about her mother shushing her when she's in the hospital. And yet it feels like, how can whether that's true or not, what making us watch that scene and her hitting, I think very clever isn't the right word. I think very like they're choosing to show Candy hit Betty 41 times. It's exactly 41 times. Not that I counted. I read a recap. It's like, yep, it's 41 times that they make you watch it.
Yes. Yes.
So I just don't, 41 times, even in the throes of, you know, not being in your body, to me, this is the strongest evidence of the show. And where I kind of wanted the show to maybe go further to say, we really do believe, but, you know, I want there to be a thesis statement on the show, which I think in me moving away from the show and having time thinking about it, the thesis statement isn't really, did Candy do it? Because I think the showrunners believe that Candy do it. It could be, how could she do it and get away with it? And this idea that, like, yeah, that's it. There's a very similar show I watched recently that I think people really hated the ending. I actually really loved it, where to me, the thesis statement at the end is like, yeah, bad people get away with bad things, especially if you have power and money. And I feel like in this situation, like, she gets away with it, and so she moves on, and she can become a mental health counselor and do it. But I think that the show showing her this scene in the middle of the episode and seeing it 41 times, I think is the show saying, like, yeah, she can say this is self-defense, but in this whole, how can you, we're watching it happen. You're seeing it with your own eyes.
Yes. And the kind of almost comical preceding scene of them patting the puppy, and then you are sleeping with my husband, and then the struggle backwards and forwards for the axe and running to the back door, and it was locked. This is slightly, it's elevated. Melanie Linsky giving a version of Betty rather than the Betty that we've seen for four episodes, and I think that's terribly clever.
And the, I mean, you talked about the sewing table being in the way. There's also the sunglasses frame, which is inadmissible in the court because the police officer picked it up with his fingers and then put it back down. But it's very clearly in the garage, and which doesn't line up with Candy's story whatsoever. In her version of events, they never go into the garage together. And the garage door, by the time Candy is even in the utility room, that garage door is locked. So I think the show saying, yeah, this doesn't really line up her story. Yeah. So, and even when you watch it, it's like, how could you even think that this, you know, if this is the truth, how can you feel like this is self-defense?
Yes. I think it was the sheer, you know, horror. And again, you know, these are horror. These are the DNA of the creatives is horror. And I've appreciated that all the way through. I did like that it was 41. I think by the time we got to the chopping, I thought I buckled in, and like you, I thought, oh, there's going to be 41 of these. Yeah. She is a slim and small woman, although we have seen her guns in the volleyball game, and apparently the real Candy Montgomery was also tiny. So there was always a question of like, well, how could she have swung this axe, you know, 41 times? Mm-hmm. But she certainly manages it. And perhaps it is the creative saying, let's just watch her do it. The law says she's not guilty because it was self-defense, but let's just watch her do it. So I think my recoiling is perhaps again something that they would like me to do, because it is horrifying watching her do it, especially having to, as Pat had to, really work to pull the axe head out of the wooden block. We see her working, and the sound design gives us the difficulty of pulling that axe out of the body, only to drive it back into the body.
I felt like the work was actually like pretty, that I felt like we were watching it, but we also weren't. We were just totally watching it from mostly from Candy's perspective. The part that got me, I watched this episode twice, is when they pull back and Betty's on the ground, and Betty's eye like blinks. And I'm like, oh no, like, oh, that's, that one was the worst for me.
I finally did do some googing once I finished, and of the autopsy tells us that of the 41 blows, 40 were delivered while she was still alive.
Oh, that's brutal. You know, it's interesting this idea we're talking about, like watching it and the way that the show makes us want to feel. And I feel like at the end of this, during this episode in particular, this is the most that I was feeling. There's very much a horror vibe before. And I think one of the things that I often, when I'm watching a horror movie, it's the delicate balance of once you've seen the thing happening or you see the monster, like the fear of the monster is worse than the monster itself sometimes, especially if like the graphics aren't great or whatever. And so like there's some very like horror, thriller, like Shining vibes I got from the show in the first few episodes of the scene where Betty is Candy is showering, and the blood is draining from her, that image of her like looking up, that's super, like, to me that was like unnerving in some sense. And then we finally do get this scene here where we're watching it happen. I think there's this interesting thing about to think this episode is all about that the jury is going to find her not guilty and that she's just going to kind of get to walk away. Obviously her husband is going to divorce her, although not for 4 years, you know, he's just been another 4 years with Candy before they eventually divorce, and she's going to move on. She's going to get to change her name and become a mental health counselor. But I think there's this interesting thing happening. I mean, crime shows are so popular right now. I think over the last few years, like the true crime stuff itself, like podcasts, obviously you're covering, you do Crime Scene over on Rob as a podcast, but this sort of these shows of people who are bad and either get away with it or don't get away with it. You know, The Dropout, Inventing Anna, The Staircase, Candy. And I think it's like interesting. I'll tease that there might be a podcast coming out soon on the PSR patron fee, which we might dive into some of this stuff by topic, but like, yeah, this show, I mean, I feel like the thesis statement is like, can you believe she got away with it? And I feel like that's how they want us to feel mad about that. I feel like, and so that to sit in uncomfortableness, be like, really, that's what happened at the end of the show and at the end of what happened in real life. Like, what do you think of that idea that's what the show, I think, wants us to sit with at the end of this? At the end of the series.
Yes. I mean, as I said before, everything's been so well done that I can only believe and trust that how I feel, that the discomfort, the questioning of the episode, the questioning of my response to it, is exactly what the creatives want me to have. The monster is still out there.
Which feels a little bit, I mean, I don't need to, you know, neither of us are American, Sarah, but, you know, number 46, no, he's number 45, I guess. Sorry, not 46, number 45 down in America. You know, I feel like this theme of bad people getting away with bad. There's a reason why I think in 2022, I guess 2021, two executives somewhere were like, we got to do the Candy story, because it's about this like thing that happens that somebody does. And then how infuriating is it that they're getting away with it? A little bit of this, like, they can't keep getting away with this, you know? There's a reason why I think that these stories are resonating with us as a culture at the moment. And I think Candy sort of like, you know, is a good example of that.
Yes, the fact that there's another one, I mean, we've been talking all the way through on this episode by episode of like, why now, why 42 years later, what is it about this this case that has come up with two, you know, let's say prestige. I'm on record as saying I don't like that phrase, but till I find a better one, I'm going to use it. We all understand what we mean by it. But that two prestige series are being made on this same old case. And I think I hadn't thought about it your way, but that's very insightful. The very fact of her, let's say, getting away with it, the law says she didn't get away with it, the law says it was self-defense, but let's say she gets away with it, we are continually seeing people getting away with bad behavior because of their power, because of their race, because of their position in society. And just now, really to date this podcast, in case someone comes to it in a year's time, but the Australian people have just not let series of bad men get away, bad men and bad women get away with it, and we have a change of government, which is hopeful. And I have to say, many of us hoped that we would be able to do it, but thought, I can just see that old government being returned. So we haven't
had ours. It's Ontario's in the midst of an election, and it's like I have that same feeling where it's like I want the ineptitude and the of the last however many years, 5 years, I guess, to just be done. And there's a really strong feeling that like it's just not going to happen, that they're just going to get to keep going. So I look to Australia as a bright light in terms of your election results. So
This as in nothing else. And now, I did call for an ad break before, but we are going to have an ad break now, so we will just sit in the hope of a flame that Australia is sending out to the rest of the world. And we're back, and we're back to Candy. I think it is a really, really good series, and we'll just do a little bit of an overview now, unless you have anything more from episode 5?
No.
All right. So we have the final cards. Alan and Elaine married almost immediately after the court case. Candy and Pat divorced 4 years later. Candy relocated, changed her name, and started a new life as a mental health counselor. So let's talk about the series as a whole. Now that we've both seen it all, we had thoughts on the way through of how each one would go. What's your overall feeling on the series?
Like I said up top, I think tremendously well acted. I think from all basically four of the main characters. I'll give a particular shout out to Jessica Biel and Melanie Lynskey, who I think were really tremendous in the show, and then Pablo Schreiber and Timothy Simons as sort of the men in their lives were very good as well. I thought perhaps the pacing of it could have been different. I think that the highs of the horror aspects of it, I thought were really well done. I come away at the end thinking that the trial, I think what you said before is like, it's a little bit of an unnecessary necessity, not unnecessary. It is a necessity to have it in there. And it feels like it doesn't jive, I think, to me as well as the rest of the episodes do. And then the other thing I would say is I think that I wish, although I think both performances are really strong between Jessica Biel and Melanie Lynskey, I wish there was a little bit more attention given to Betty. I think that as the victim of, I mean, I think the show is saying that she's a victim of the crime. The court case would say that it's self-defense. So she instigated the event. And so therefore Candy is not guilty. But I kind of wish I think there's some really good stuff about it. I wish we got more about Betty and the show is called Candy, right? So it's obviously about Candy, and maybe that's where I'm just talking about, like, you know, there's like evil people who get away with evil things. That's what the show wants us to focus on, and I maybe wish there was a little bit more, like, is there a world in which the show is called Betty? I don't know.
Well, that would be a very interesting world. I think you know, we're pretty clear that the fifth episode is required because we need the end of the story, but perhaps left us a little flat the inclusion of Melanie Lynskey as Betty watching the proceedings. Absolutely saves, if it needed saving, if it is indeed, you know, the lesser of the five. It absolutely saves the episode for me. Right from the start, I felt in really capable hands. I loved I always go back to the outside of the house, as we know, or we guess what's inside with the baby crying, the creeping horror, our understanding of each of the characters, not through dialogue, but through actions, through facial expressions, the economy of the storytelling. I think all of this is really strong. We are fascinated and repelled in equal measures, and I think that's very deliberate on the part of the creators. What I think they did very well was give us this community. They gave us the church ladies. They gave us the suburban coupledom. They gave us the drudgery of sometimes drudgery of family life. Not all family life is drudgery, but there is all the things that have to be done in order that a household run. And they gave us that as a horror trope, which I appreciated very much. So I would definitely recommend that people are watching it. If you have madly somehow just turned on this episode and you haven't watched it, you haven't listened to previous episodes, first of all, what are you doing? But second of all, yes, do watch it. Don't be put off at all by our thoughtful criticisms of the fifth episode. I'm looking forward now to watching it again all in one, or all in a day or two or a weekend, just as a viewer. And I think that I suspect very much that it would reward a second viewing, because the detail within the production is so good, the detail of design, the detail of the camera work, and as you say, the very, very good acting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting release model for the show to basically say, you know, okay, May 9th, here's an episode, and every day from now on, you're going to get one. I have not seen that from anybody else. No other TV network that I've seen has done that model. I've seen, you know, batches in a week, or, you know, obviously there's like the Netflix binge. Very interesting. And I wonder why I do think that like the quick nature pace of the show, I do think the way that they kind of, they're not telling the tale in linear fashion, although it's mostly like the day of the murder and then then flashing back like 2 years, and then you lead up to that, and then you jump to the trial. In each episode, like in the second episode, there's the scene that we covered where you look down the hall, and then suddenly it's the day of the murder where Candy is showering, right? So I think that that would work better, I think, in a binge than it might have done in the way that I watched it. Although, yes, I'll say I have criticism of the show, but overall I really enjoyed it. I would go back and rewatch it at some point and think it was very interesting. It was good, thought provoking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we can look forward to the HBO one that's coming. But also I am interested to go back to 1990 to a film called A Killing in a Small Town.
Yes, me too.
Excuse me. Starring Barbara Hershey. Barbara Hershey, one of my enduring favourites, has had an extremely long career. If you don't know Barbara Hershey, get on your IMDb. What are you doing with your life? Go and look at Barbara Hershey. I don't know why I'm questioning our listeners so much today, but, you know, get on to things. If you don't know Barbara Hershey, she is a wonderful chameleon, you know, in the way that Jessica Biel has turned out to be, and has had a very solid career. So I'm going to see if I can find that.
Which one do you think has the best name? We have Killing in a Small Town, we have Candy, and then I think it's Love and Death is the best series. Which one do you think is which one do you think is the best name?
I like A Killing in a Small Town.
I do as well. I feel like they got they got on it early. Yeah.
I'm intrigued by your idea of a series called Betty. And as soon as you say that, it does completely change. So the naming of this series is very deliberate. It's it's Candy, and it's from her point of view. Mm-hmm. So in my Googling, I also did find out that Candy did take a polygraph test. It indicated her story of self-defense was truthful. Mm-hmm. She tells you everything you know about you need to know about polygraphs. Mm-hmm. The
who's
trial
polygraph?
Took, who's Polly?
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Trial took 8 days. Seems quite short.
Justice system in 1988. The trial, the murder happens in May or no June. Because I was thinking it's June 13th. This murder happened on my mother's birthday.
Oh no!
Yeah, my mother was born on Friday the 13th, but not in that year. But June 13th. And then the trial happens in the fall, and it happens in 8 days. Very quick justice system.
Very quick justice system. Yes. The jury was 9 women and 3 men. It's very interesting. I don't quite know whether there's anything to be drawn from that. The series sticks pretty closely to a very interesting article. If you're in Candyland, if you're in for a penny, get in for a pound, and have a look at the Texas Monthly two-part article. It was published in 1984, and it's called Love and Death in Silicon Prairie. It's another title for you. Mm-hmm. Part one was called Candy Montgomery's Affair. Apparently she had an affair all by herself. And part two was called The Killing of Betty Gore. So, interestingly, the Texas Monthly spoke to Candy Montgomery, and the article follows very much, or the other way around, really, the series follows very much the information in the article. So where they say, oh, you know, it's based on a true story but fictionalized, I wonder who they think is doing the fictionalizing, because when you read the article, you think this is the series. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure why Candy decided to unburden herself 4 years later, but she did, and we have mm-hmm. these articles which can be read.
The other one that I guess it would not be totally surprising to me that perhaps somebody who's wife and the mother of your children, I guess Alan became estranged from his two daughters, which is unfortunate to hear in the aftermath of this horrific thing that happens to their family. But they're again, I don't actually think I need the show to be like more focused about Alan. I think what I like, you know, the focus that it's about Candy and it's about Betty mostly, though Alan is a prominent figure. But there does seem to be, I think, at the end there, some questions about Alan, him getting together so quickly after, and then they divorce. But they do lose custody rights of their two children, which is unfortunate.
Yes, we haven't mentioned, I think, in any of the recaps, the Betty's parents, who are not fans of Alan, perhaps only because of the affair, but perhaps prior to that. And they're certainly unhappy. They're quoted after the events of the trial as saying that justice had not been done. And so were they the ones that got custody of Alan and Betty's children?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So we did it. We did Candy. Now you guys go and do Candy. You people go and do Candy. I don't know why I'm being so instructive to the listeners. I'm feeling bossy this morning. So yes, I hope you have watched along with us. We look forward to your comments and feedback as we go. So Grace, what have you got going on, and where can people find you?
Oh, lots of stuff here over on Post Show Recaps. Ariel and I will be back with our movie coverage this week. We're going to be chatting about Firestarter, the Stephen King remake that they with Zac Efron that they made for some reason. Mm-hmm. We'll chat through our thoughts on that one. It's available on streaming, I think, as well as in theaters, so that will be fun. Rich and I are doing Under the Banner of Heaven, another crime show set in the 1980s, all about a double murder, as well as sort of examining the Church of Latter-day Saints. And Shining Girls, another crime. PSR, all about the crime stuff lately. Shining Girls, a sort of time traveling serial killer show starring Elizabeth Moss, is a very, very good sad face. Dr. Amanda, this won't come out on her birthday, but happy birthday, Dr. Amanda, and with Dr. Melissa as well. So that's been very fun. Over on Rob as a Podcast, I cover sports with the Off Speed Podcast. We'll have a episode coming out next week, which will be all about LGBTQ people in sports. I'm very excited. I'm going to have the great Frankie de la Cretas, a very great writer, on to chat about the state of LGBTQ people in sports for Pride Month. So yeah, and then I have another exciting project coming out for Rob as a Podcast. I'm very, very excited about. Stay tuned in June for some more Survivor LGBTQIA plus content. So keep an eye out.
Cannot yes. wait. And do you want to give your Twitter?
Yes, @HiFromGrace. Come say hello.
Yeah, come say hi. Mm-hmm. I'm on Twitter also @SarahCarradine. You can give me your comments and feedbacks there. And I have a true crime review podcast called Crime Scene over on RHAP with the great Murray Forth. So it's time for the last time to say bye, y'all. And remember, everything's going to be all right.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.